for the licensing. But the legislature has said one half of those funds are to be used to pay for legal services for those boards and commissions. So that's an existing fund that exists. The existing fund, I believe, has currently $792,000 in it. It is obviously going to be affected somewhat by returns and things like that. But our view is that that seems to be a relatively consistent number over time that we're comfortable with as being generated by that source of income that has been designated by the legislature for payment. What we discovered was that money was at ANI. In other words, what would happen is you would appropriate us general fund dollars and we would spend general fund dollars, and then at some point that money would be returned to ANI. And so we felt that rather than ask you for the general fund appropriations for those positions or for that work, the state's receiving $400,000 a biennium to pay for that work.
So you're taking out the pass-through, in essence.
Exactly.
And then with regards to the $500,000, you said that's a direct savings to the to the general fund. Was it? That's also kind of a pass-through.
It is a pass-through through the contract support costs.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm curious about the next item, the charge to the Department of Family Services. Does DFS know about this charge?
Yes. Yes, Representative Connolly.
Because I haven't seen it in their budget, an additional $500,000 to you.
That money would show up on their budget in two ways. One is that there are some funds that are currently not being fully utilized under the 4E program, for which some of the attorney services that we provide are actually covered by that. So these are monies that they will show under their federal ledger as being 4E grant money that they're not using fully. The other is that, like all federal grants, they have an amount that gets chopped off and will be shown as an allocation to contract support costs. That's the same pass-through process where we send the money to the contract support costs pot, and then that turns around and reimburses the general fund for the attorneys that we are providing them. And we're going to put that on budget and just do it directly without the pass-through. So that's where that money is and we have spoken directly with Dr. Corsi about this. This would not be in our budget reductions without his approval in our conversations.
Mr. Chairman? Just quick, I just maybe need a clarification. I thought the 4E funds were for Native American foster care. Isn't that program, or is that a broader? I'm maybe looking at the two Dons.
Don?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, it's a broader than just the tribes.
Okay.
But to Representative Connolly's point, the other side of this transaction, that DFS has not represented this exchange in its budget, although I have no doubt that arrangements have been made. It is not a formal request or an increase of those federal funds in their budget.
Okay. Continue.
If there are no further questions on the Attorney General's Law Office, I think the next reductions were within the Division of Criminal Investigations.
Just one other question. Do you have, in the Law Office portion, what vacancies do you have now?
We have a practicing attorney 3 position in the Tort Litigation Division.
Is that the I'm trying to see how you...
Well, there's two. One of them is the workers' comp position for Cheyenne that we've advertised. The same thing we just discussed with Casper. So we've gotten all the B-11s done and everything. That took a little while to get that through the process, but that's going now. And so we have that. We have... There's a position in tort litigation. That's the group that defends the state in civil rights cases, prisoner cases, and so forth, personal injury cases. We have four normally four attorneys there. We have a supervisor that's coming over here, Tori Racinas, but I filled that position already. But I had another one that we're still working on filling. We have a candidate, but we're working on looking at her references right now.
I see practicing attorney three, been a vacant 10 months. What's that for?
Yeah, there, one of them, the lower one that's been 10 months is the workers' comp. That was the moving the positions around, doing this process that we talked about. And again, you know, to put that off the onto the workforce services budget. The other one, the upper one, which is 15, let's see if we have a number on that. I don't see a number, but the upper one is the one in the group of tort litigation attorneys. There's four attorneys, one of which is a supervisor. That position we've been advertising, interviewing, trying to get the right candidate. We have several in that group that are with 3 years, 3 to 5 years experience. And we had Tori Racinas with 25 years experience. We're looking for somebody with maybe 7 or 8. That's been a little difficult, but we have a candidate right now we're interested in, but we're not sure yet. So we've been moving on it. We've just been taking our time to try to get the right person.
Thank you.
We also have two paralegal positions. One is in the criminal division. We're interviewing for that position. We've had, I think, 4 different interviews so far. I haven't made a choice yet.
Is that the 150194?
I'm not sure whether it's 194 or 141, but there's two paralegals. One of the other paralegal is in tort. Actually, we've moved that over from natural resources to tort. So that's now been moved over to the tort litigation group for to balance the workload because of workload. And we're actively – actually, we have a candidate for that one, too, that I think probably I'll make an offer this week, just checking her references as well. So, and then at the bottom, we have two positions that are – well, those are funded by education. Those are ones
– The AWACS.
Yeah, the AWACS. Mike O'Donnell has a permanent attorney with him and a paralegal. If we were to have – this hasn't been – these haven't been filled in a while. They're there in case they're, the school districts – file some big lawsuits against the state. So that's – they're kind
5 years and 10 years.
Oh. Waiting there, yeah. So, yeah, so those two. Have I missed something, John? What have I missed?
There's one on there that – it's not a typo. I think it's actually just that the
– Oh, yeah.
The code got a little cut off. There's one that says Office Support Specialist 2. That was a little surprising to us when we saw it. That's not actually in the law office. 101 is the law office code. That's in the Governor's Council for Developmental Disabilities. That's what that position, that individual's last day, I think, was Friday. But he handles a number of tasks, but that's not actually in the law office because the first question we asked when we saw the list was, who is that position? We've never heard of it, but that's not because it's not in the law office.
Okay.
So I'll try. I understand. I recognize the hour's late. I'll try to at least leave my conversation as brief as I can. On the Division of Criminal Investigations.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just back on that, I just want to get this clear. So most of this stuff is passed through. So is the only savings – the state's going to realize out of this the elimination of that one position in the law office?
No. Well, there's two. There's the law office. There's also the workers' compensation money that's now coming out of the workers' compensation fund, which is not available to pay for general fund expenses but can pay for workers' compensation-related expenses because it's managed like an insurance company. For the others, to say it's not recognizing the savings, if you're asking are the positions going to be laid off, the answer is no. I think the key epiphany for us was you could fire those attorneys tomorrow and the state would save nothing. I mean, all that would happen is that the amount of federal funds or the amount of 492 funds used to pay for those services would disappear. And so it's the opposite. What we discovered is that we had a number of attorneys, many of them working on federal grant programs or federally grant funded agencies within the state of Wyoming, where if we were to get rid of these attorneys, the savings to the general fund would be nothing. It would simply reduce the amount of federal grants funds that was already being used to pay for those services, but it wasn't visible through the appropriations process. So it would look like we were making changes to the state, and in fact, we were just denying ourselves the ability to use federal grant money at the state of Wyoming. And that was the key, because that
that doesn't apply to the workers' compensation fund, Laurie. That's no more cost to you. It's just a savings to the fund.
It's a savings to the fund, and you're correct. It's a savings to the fund, but we also gave up all general fund money associated with those positions. So we're not. There was general fund savings there that we said no. We kept the position, and now we're using the position to lower the cost to the workers' compensation fund.
So how do we know how much you actually saved to the general fund? I mean, there's not a breakdown on here for that.
All of the money we've identified there is reductions to the 101 appropriation to the Attorney General's Office of General Fund Appropriations.
The $143,000.
No, the whole amounts are
8%.
The 8%. In other words, our 101 saving personnel appropriation will decline by. Let me see here. I apologize. I moved. By, let me get the full number. I'm looking at the wrong thing.
What's the number?
Which page is it?
On the breakdown of page 12.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the percentages. But hold on, I can get you the full number. It's here. So the key point is that all of this money is money that you previously appropriated to the Attorney General's office in the general fund appropriations process, and we are asking that 101 appropriation decline by that amount, and that our responsibility is to identify. I mean, these sources are available. These are sources we found. These are not general funded sources. These are sources that can be used specifically for lawyers helping on specifically on these types of agencies and tasks. And so this is real savings to the general fund.
If you add in the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit, which was we just cut 24,000 plus lost some matching grants on that. If you add that to what we've just talked about, the total number is $1,389,005 of general fund reduction. As I say, we didn't talk about Medicaid Fraud Control. It's in the book coming up, but. Small number.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, as we're trying to get our minds around this, on page 14, looking at lines, if I've got this right, 196 is the rate holiday or the reduction in the insurance rates. What is line 105?
Employer paid benefits for the
I think that's the Mr. Chairman, through you, I think that's the benefits associated with the personnel positions that we have removed the appropriations for. And so, in other words, we are, in addition, you know, when we say that we're going to take that money to pay for somebody, we're not just paying for their salary, we're paying for their benefits. And when we reduce the amount that the general fund is paying for that position, we don't just reduce the salary, we reduce the benefits associated with it.
Okay, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, the 105 is for the reduction in the positions or the change in the funding source for those positions. And then, so it is the end of the day, so I'm getting tired, but So 14 million in salaries, classified salaries, and a $333,000 savings. Is that number right? One of the Dons.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, was your question then? That's the savings to the salaries, the $373,000?
No, Mr. Chair, I didn't say it very well, but on what we did with Section 5, the governor's enterprise reductions, I'm assuming that's the $333,000 out of this unit on $14 million in salaries. Is that okay? All right. It seemed like it was larger on some of the other agencies. Okay.
So are we on that? Are we done with the law office?
Hope so.
I think so. Right, I mentioned in passing Medicaid fraud control. That was a small reduction. That's on page 19. I don't think we should spend time on it if you're looking to spend valuable time. I don't think that's it's a minor item.
Okay.
$24,000 of general fund reduction.
I apologize. So then the next page would be for the reductions to the Division of Criminal Investigations. And on page 28, these are the reductions to the Operations Division. These are the special agents that do investigations throughout the state.
Yes.
Backing up to page 24, though, isn't there another FTE added? Consumer protection? We skipped over that, I think. Where did that come from? I mean,
that was general fund to consumer.
Looks like general funds.
Oh, that was the paralegal position we moved from general fund to consumer protection. So the increase to the consumer protection fund is what's identified on page 24. The reduction from that came, that position was previously general fund funded. So we.
Where does it say that?
So the increase in cost is on page 24. The reduction in cost would show up under the, let me see if I can find it for you, sir. It shows up under the, law office expenditures. It shows up within that, page 14.
I think all these, we're sitting here assuming they're transfers from one to the other, but it really doesn't say that anywhere. And I think,
it's one of those ones on page 14 that made up the $473,000 was, that was two positions, and one of them was the one that went to, workers' comp, and the other one became funded by consumer. So that's two positions.
I think we're going to need a little more.
We could provide that without any difficulty. I mean, yeah. We know the names of the people and everything. We've tracked them. We know who they are.
When we pass this, I mean, it's got to, you know, we want to know what it says.
Sure, absolutely.
This kind of.
Okay. So we're back on criminal investigations. We
have reduced the number of task force officers by four. Those individuals are employees of local law enforcement, but they spend their time being paid a certain portion of their salary, along with their vehicle and other equipment, is provided by the Division of Criminal Investigation. They work on investigations for the state of Wyoming. We have reduced those positions by four.
Because those personnel.
What page?
Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry, sir.
It's on page 2829. At the top of 29, we are proposing to eliminate four task force officer positions, if you see that. Just to supplement, Mr. Chairman, those personnel are actually employed by local agencies. Mm-hmm. And so when they leave a task force, we stop funding that, but they have jobs. So when you're making choices about cutting personnel, you like to cut people that have a job rather than people that are going to have to be riffed, although we have a few of those in that are going to come up here in another part of DCI where we actually had to do several riffs. But so these are local officers that were on task forces that were dropping off the task forces to save the money that's it requires to keep them on a task force out of the general fund.
Okay. Representative.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I am confused. So what will these officers be doing? They're not being riffed, but it's a $418,000 cut to the general fund. So, again, are they being moved to another unit? Is the work still being done, or is the work not being done? I am confused about this.
For the employees themselves, they are not actually employees of the state of Wyoming. They are employees of local law enforcement agencies, and they will return to those local law enforcement agencies who will cover their salaries. We will not pay for those individuals, and they will not work on state cases. So this is a reduction in capacity. There are four fewer people out there working on DCI-related investigations, but we are also not paying for – we pay for them to work on DCI-related investigations by paying local government for the use of these individuals.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about the extent of internet crimes against children that we have been seeing and that will no longer be covered?
Well, I want to be – only one of them is an internet crimes against children officer. And the position was actually vacant at the time that we eliminated it. In other words, we had hired that temporary employee as a full-time special agent in the Internet Crimes Against Children unit. So we had a vacant position that was being funded by state funds to do work on Internet Crimes Against Children. We share your concern, Representative. We don't want to limit that. But at the end of the day, we're not going to spend state money on it. We are in the process of reprogramming the federal grant money to allow us to rehire that position. But what that means is we're going to have less money from that federal grant to pay for equipment and things like that, upgrades to the overall ICAC regime. So in the short term, we're going to be able to keep the capacity and the work. Long term, we have less money to do the work that we were doing. It's part of the reality that all the agencies in the state of Wyoming are facing.
But the priority of that move is to prioritize the person, the investigator, over equipment. Equipment wears out eventually, but when you're making choices now, you make sure you cover the person and get the job done and use the equipment you have. And then at some point, we have to deal with equipment that becomes obsolete. But right now, we prioritize the position with that federal reprogramming. So actually, the work's going to continue to be done for internet crimes with the same capacity, just from a different source. It's very complicated, but it's very I think it's the right move.
Mr. Chairman, and I'm sorry, you may have covered it, and I just missed it, but looking on page 25, where it shows the reduction in seven, you've got four of those being the folks you just talked about, but where are the other three? Who are the other three in that reduction?
The other three are in the seizures, aren't they?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, none of the seven are reflected. There are seven more coming we'll get to in the crime lab. The methamphetamine initiative, we have actual layoffs as well as positions eliminated within the Division of Criminal Investigation. But these are four on top of that. But they're not, because they were not state employees to begin with, they don't represent a reduction in FTEs. They represent just a reduction in our work.
Yes.
Just going back to those four task force. So one is internet crimes against children. What are the other three?
The other three were an official with the Natrona County Sheriff's Office who returned to work for the Natrona County Sheriff's Office, an individual with the Uinta County Sheriff's Office, and an individual with the Park County Sheriff's Office.
Huh. Okay. Thank you.
That's operations.
Where are we at now?
Page 32 is where we're going to talk about the reductions to the Criminal Investigations Crime Lab.
Okay.
This is just a vacant position in the Division of Criminal Investigations that was eliminated. What we did as a result of hard budget work is we have eliminated at the crime lab the trace and gunshot residue services that the crime lab provides. This is something that's been previously announced. I mean, it was covered on National Public Radio, among other places, last spring, I think. But we don't do that work anymore. So if you send a fiber to the Division of Criminal Investigation, we'll tell you that we don't match fibers with other fibers, and we're getting out of that business. Now, are we thrilled about it? No, but when we looked at the level of where the future was going, we made the determination that it was really going to be about, from here forward, DNA. That the issue is, you know, people, instead of asking us to match hair with hair, we're going to match the DNA on the hair with the DNA on the suspect. And that capacity is handled separately and is done separately and is really where forensic science is moving because of the certainty you can get with DNA matches that you can't get with hair and fiber analysis. It is what it is. I mean, these are real cuts, sir.
Okay.
And then there's a small cut to laboratory supplies. Those are, you know, we believe we can get what we need, certainly for the remainder of the biennium with federal grant applications.
Okay.
The next cuts for the Division of Criminal Investigation happen on page 38. This is where we laid off folks. When the folks talked about the people that were laid off over the summer, the three of those individuals were employees of the Division of Criminal Investigation working in the criminal justice information systems. As you all have, I'm sure heard from other agencies, you know, the governor's message to us was, identify programs, identify redundancies, identify things, you know, if you're going to cut, don't just simply, remove a person and expect everyone else to work twice as hard and actually provide the same services. Identify something you're not going to do anymore and cut it. The Division of Criminal Investigation was operating a 24-hour command center. So we had a command center, we had people staffing it 24 hours a day so that you could reach, folks with the Division of Criminal Investigation. Well, the Highway Patrol, which is headed by the former director of operations at the Division of Criminal Investigation, Colonel Holler, also operates a 24-hour command center. And we felt that that work was duplicative. And we felt that we could enter into conversations and that what we could do is provide the same ability to reach DCI agents, the same ability to reach all throughout the state, but that that would be done through the Highway Patrol dispatchers who are trained to do that and are available 24 hours a day. And unlike our employees are on shift work, and so working the graveyard shift doesn't result in the same kind of overtime challenges that it would for us.
And there's a supplement to this. You know, we've worked hard over the last several sessions on the Safe to Tell program, and, you know, that was an issue that kind of brought a lot of this to our mind and to a head because, you know, Safe to Tell, we have to have people available to read those text messages from, you know, people in trouble at schools 24/7. But Colonel Haller stepped up and we were able to establish that at Highway Patrol, which is the way Colorado had been doing it for years. We thought DCI was the better place, but that whole review kind of came together, and I think we've very appreciative of Highway Patrol doing that because that allowed us to make this kind of reduction in the DCI command center that's doable. So that's where we found these. I think all these RIFT employees found jobs fairly quickly, is my understanding. So that was a good thing.
We did what we could. I mean, we feel very, very strongly that this isn't something anyone should have to go through. But you know, these aren't times. There are a lot of folks that are experiencing this in Wyoming, and you got to do what you got to do. In addition, we had the receptionist for the Division of Criminal Investigation. She retired in July, and we eliminated her position. Actually, what we've done is we've moved one of our fingerprint technicians who does the intake of fingerprints, and they are the primary person with backup who occupies that seat. Recognizing that to the extent that there is drop in traffic at the Division of Criminal Investigation, which is candidly rare given the nature of our operations there, it's folks coming to drop off fingerprint cards. I would also note that there, you know, some time ago we had asked you all and had been working on making sure that the fingerprint check backlog for employees was low. It remains low. We were told today that it's 7-day turnaround now. We were looking at, a couple years ago, we were talking about 60 or more, and it's 7 days.
This is when folks say daycare centers and so forth need to get their employees fingerprinted. Sure.
Right. We were that is not something we were willing to sacrifice. And then finally, a significant reduction there is to the maintenance contracts we have. We have a number of software systems and programs and computer programs. They come with hours of maintenance that are allocated to pay for the costs of repairs to those programs. We've informed the vendors we're going to pay for fewer hours. So, I mean, there is a risk there if it turns out we're wrong and there's a really significant change, but it's now a risk that we're going to have to accommodate elsewhere. That we just reduce the number of hours available to maintain these computer programs. Yes. Thank you, sir. And then finally, just so you should be aware of it, two of the positions that were eliminated from the Division of Criminal Investigation were eliminated actually under the governor's penny plan. So they're not part of the reductions we're asking you all to do today, but they were the meth initiative, which was implemented through a special agent and a crime lab technician, and we eliminated those two positions. There were vacant positions within the laboratory and within the operations unit, so this didn't result in the termination of anyone's employment, but these are positions that have been eliminated and returned to the general fund.
Okay.
Again, that was done as part of the governor's penny plan, so that's not something we're asking you all to become involved with. The next reductions would be for the Law Enforcement Academy. They're on page 46. If there can be said to be any effects that on the state's budget that might be positive from the decline in mineral exploration, it would be the fact that we no longer need to subsidize employees of the state of Wyoming who live in the Douglas area. This is a housing allowance that was provided by the state because living in Douglas was very, very expensive, and we couldn't hire or retain people. We no longer need that money that's been returned to the state.
Okay.
The second is a reduction in the use of adjuncts. Some of the work that we do when we're training law enforcement officers involves having folks from local offices travel to the Law Enforcement Academy so they can provide instruction as adjunct instructors. We're reducing that. Instead we're looking at the current staff and other ways to ensure that the instruction remains high. It's additional duties for the already certified trainers. Finally, this is one of those that we were sort of forced to confront by the crisis is, many of the individuals going through the peace officer training, no longer use, large handbooks. They no longer want any of their materials in paper with binders and things like that. That was something we've been doing for quite a long time because that's the way education had been. Now they don't want that. They want a PDF that they can download to their iPad or something like that. So previously we were spending quite a bit of money to provide paper binders, copies of all the instructional material to the officers. That material is still available to them. It's just available in PDF form. And many of them want it only in PDF form. They don't want to carry around the binders. So this is a reduction in the amount of money that we were spending on it to accommodate the times.
Mr. Chairman, on that particular item, just on the wording, it is saying that regarding the cost of $1.90 per day is passed on to the student, is that if they request the printed material, or is that cost passed on if it's still in a downloadable PDF? I just went clear on that.
I'll Dave Harris to step up the record block. My understanding is we're not passing any cost of this on. If they want to print it out, they can print it out, but that has to be their decision and their resources. I don't believe we're charging for the materials themselves.
Mr. Chairman, Dave Harris, Law Enforcement Academy. As a matter of fact, we are charging the officers for these materials. As they go through peace officer as well as detention officer base, we provide them with a number of manuals, brochures, food, or I should say binders, and various cards and materials that are essential for their attendance to that basic course. So what we are doing, we're passing those costs on to them as well as their law enforcement agencies at $1.90 a day. So that comes up to $133 for peace officer and $76 for detention officer.
So, Mr. Chairman, I ask a question. That's now a cost, and it goes back to the counties and the cities.
That's correct, sir. I apologize. I misunderstood.
So it's not savings to this budget, but not overall to the state. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
In addition, there are some individuals who are remaining there. We lowered the classification for a housekeeping supervisor to a regular housekeeper, and increased the supervision responsibilities of an existing manager for facilities. We have a position that does a significant amount of work with the advanced training that we provide at the Law Enforcement Academy. And unlike the Peace Officer Basic, the advanced training is something that the Academy charges for, and that person's salary is now tied to the work that they do. And they're on the Enterprise Fund. Interestingly, the $15,000 office space rental, we have a federal grant that we administer to do Homeland Security work. We had explored and were looking to charge that grant for the cost of housing the individuals doing that grant-related work. It doesn't look like that grant's going to allow us to do that right now, so that's just going to be a cost that we have to find somewhere else. But we're still asking for the reduction to our general fund appropriation. Finally, the utilities. The Law Enforcement Academy actually pays for its own utilities. We're not part of the ANI. To the best of my knowledge, we're not part of the ANI utilities budget, only at that institution. And so these are reductions. Some of them, most of them we believe are going to be, or some number of them are going to be made up by the fact that we are replacing a relatively antiquated HVAC system there.
Mr. Chairman, do you still, should we be page by paging, or are we still, should we continue on in this fashion, or is there any, I know it's rolling along here at 25 of 7.
I think we're getting there,
but it's, we got a little ways to go yet, if you're fine with it. Just thought I'd mention. Somewhat mind numbing sometimes.
Let's move on.
Okay, the next agency actually jumps quite a bit to page 59. That's Peace Officer Standards and Training, I believe.
Okay.
That lost a position. We eliminated one of the three employees of Peace Officer Standards and Training. The position became vacant, and we chose not to continue. What we have done, because there's a real challenge with an agency that drops down to two people. You end up, you know, if one person's out on annual leave or sick, you know, there's nobody to answer the phone when you go to the, when you go to lunch or something else happens. So we felt very strongly we should be able to continue that coverage. So what we've actually done with the Peace Officer Standards and Training Commission is twofold. First, we were able to obtain a federal grant, which will allow us to automate some of the tasks. So we believe that the workload will still be manageable by the folks that are there. Second, we've actually moved them to co-locate them. Previously, Peace Officer Standards and Training was located out in Southern Cheyenne in the Pacific Building, which is largely an archives building, but had a small little office attached to it. It was physically removed from the rest of the Attorney General's office and from the rest of state government, really. And so we've moved them. We found some rooms in the what's called the Capitol Hill Building, where a number of our other divisions are located, and they're actually going to they're currently sharing space with the school finance litigators. We're actually reorienting for other reasons those individuals, and we're going to put them with the fiscal office. And the expectation is that when the phone rings, you answer it. And if you answer it, and there'll be a line for the fiscal unit, and there'll be a line for the police officer standards and training. And if the individuals who don't work on that full-time are not available, well, you'll take a message, but there'll be the ability to get a hold of somebody and the ability to check on things so that we won't have phones going to voicemail or phones just not being answered. And that's been made possible by relocating them, recognizing that going down to a two-person office is a hard thing. The medical review panel, those cuts are on page, it's on page 63 and 64. This is an institution that was enacted to deal with, medical malpractice, issues. And the idea is that you could send a case to the medical review panel. It's used, some, but not frequently. And
how often?
Until recently, not much. I think there were some cases last year. I can get you that information, sir. I know that it's been used in the last two or three years, but not many cases are used with this function. But we supply the function. It has to be available if litigants want to participate in the process. So we're the professional service funds are used to pay for, I believe, physicians that would be contracted to do the work of the medical review panel, and they are, and this is just less money to do that work.
Chairman?
Yes.
So with the two positions with this, if this was eliminated, where would those room for those people, or they'd be out of a job? What are those two positions?
There's an attorney and there's a paralegal. They're both actually located in Casper. They are, if the funding for this were to be eliminated, those individuals would be terminated. Currently, the paralegal and the attorney provide support to the Oil and Gas Commission. That's the other position. The Oil and Gas Commission has actually asked that we hire an additional counsel given their legal needs, and so we have a separate position that was approved last year to hire an additional attorney to help serve the Oil and Gas Commission. That position is paid for by the commission, but this attorney was doing the Oil and Gas Commission work. So in other words, right now we have, in effect, 1¾ attorneys working on the Oil and Gas Commission's work. If we eliminate this position, we'd eliminate that assistance as well. And the paralegal is the same is true. These are positions that, exist for a function, but we have worked very hard to ensure that they are, productive in other areas when they're not doing that work. And in fact, our expectation is that these two positions will, to the extent that there's necessary spillover on workers' compensation or oil and gas or other work in Casper, they will be available and will be doing that work.
So essentially we have three attorneys and a paralegal in Casper. It was an attorney and a paralegal primarily begun by medical review panel, but that attorney started doing a lot of work for Oil and Gas Conservation Commission because they had a lot of time on their hands, and that was good because they needed the work, and they need even more now. So we have three attorneys and a paralegal, and the latest hire up there is Oil and Gas Conservation Fund. So we can really have an office in Casper now, which is really great. Three attorneys and a paralegal.
And I will say there are enough state agencies and legal needs in Casper that we're finding work for them to do, and actually having a team of attorneys is very helpful, ensuring that everybody's productive. I mean, there's a lot for folks to do. And the ability to share work, the being forced to be accountable to the person sitting in the office next to you, those are all very valuable things. One thing that you should be aware of, it's not related to any fiscal impact on you all is that we've seen a significant uptick in the Casper area in DFS protective work and termination of parental rights. It's a function of the economic downturn. And it's also a function of the fact that we are willing to take some of these cases from the district attorney's office, and when we do it, we'll do it right. And so actually the attorneys in this, you know, the medical review panel attorney, is also helping with actual litigation currently on DFS related matters. Although we're not moving the funding for that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just a quick question then. I'm a little confused, curious about the salaries. So the 103 code where it's 287,000 plus. So is the reality that it's a quarter of that? Because what didn't you just tell us that this attorney is really doing oil and gas commission work and only working about a quarter of time on medical review panel?
The salary is paid by the general fund to the medical review panel, to that attorney. To the extent that attorney has medical review panel work, that's what the person should be working on. To the extent that the person has not had medical review panel work, because the medical review panel I don't think has been as successful as we all might have hoped in terms of diverting medical malpractice cases out of the court system, we have that individual working on other tasks, and one of those other tasks has been the Oil and Gas Commission. There is another position that's funded for it does not show up under the medical review panel. There's another position in the law office that's funded by the Oil and Gas Commission completely, and that individual works on Oil and Gas Commission matters in addition to this person.
Okay, so thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this is more of a comment. It just doesn't seem very transparent. That if you, I mean, I understand not having one person assigned and only one person for doing X, Y, or Z, and that you want to train people so that they are good attorneys elsewhere. But honestly, you're talking about, it seems to me, some kind of law division work back in Unit 101 or 100 that we, you know, dealt with an hour and a half ago, and kind of telling us that you have someone who is very specifically paid under another unit and fund that's doing work with your law office. And again, that isn't transparent, and we honestly like to see.
I agree. The challenge we have had is that this position was funded and existed for the medical review panel work. And one of the management challenges is that there's not a full-time caseload or of any kind. It is an attorney who does this work. This is an attorney who is a senior assistant attorney general in the attorney general's office. And the challenge, you know, one of the things we discovered is that, you know, before we're going to come to this body and ask for more work to do the state's, more individuals to do the state's legal work, our obligation is to make sure that everybody in the state's employ is fully productive and working hard. And one of the things that's been important for us is to say, you know, this is a position that's created by the legislature. We need to have someone doing this work. It's funded. And the question was, do we have a medical review panel attorney? Well, we've had one. We need one because we don't control that workload. That workload's controlled by private counsel.
I think we understand that, John. My question would be, could you provide us with information of how many panels have met over the past 3 years? How much time that involves? Because if it's, you know, everyone waives it essentially, because it doesn't do any good. If you got a good case, you got a good case.
Right.
So the point is, the real answer is perhaps we should get rid of it, because if it's not really serving its function, so we'd like to know how often they actually meet and what if they really provide a service conceptually. So, if you can provide us a follow up on how many times they meet and what those costs are. And I see you've got $115,000 in contract services also on this budget. And well, what do you need that for? If you're not meeting and they're not really performing the duties, then once again, those are general fund dollars that can be returned to us if it's a program that simply is not functioning the way it was meant to be.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And just to follow up, and if this attorney really is working 1 3/4 time for oil and gas, and we're only paying for one oil and gas attorney, we need to know that as well.
Okay.
Okie doke.
I think we are now into the victim services unit, and I'm going to start talking, but there are a lot of complexities with the various federal funds, and I want to make sure I don't misstate something. In fact, actually, I may just ask Kara Chambers, the director of victim services, to come up because I'm not even sure where I want to direct your attention first. I think I'll let her identify it.
I'm hitting mute. Hello? Morning. Maybe when we dropped it, we finally killed it.
Did you get it?
Okay.
Now you're in trouble. Haster's trying to fix it.
Well, while he's distracted, I'm going to take his cake.
I just give it to Donna.
I will just.
Is this on? Good evening. My name is Kara Chambers. I'm the director of the Division of Victim Services. I guess it was turned over to me, but I'm happy to answer questions. I don't know how you would like me to present this other than walk you through it.
Why don't you explain what's going on?
What's going on? Generally, just following the governor's percentage recommendations. Trying to be as responsive as we can and making cuts where we can, keeping boots on the ground. So you'll see cuts to areas such as service provider salaries, because that was an area that we could take a disproportionate cut, because that represents about $8,000 to the 61 service provider programs, but in the long run, $8,000 isn't a lot to any one individual program, but it made a big difference over the biennium. We also were able to move one of our positions from general fund into our surcharge fund. And you will see that there is a small increase in the surcharge, so not general fund money, and that's to cover that position, because as we've seen, it's not just salary, it's also benefits, et cetera. We feel that that was a good place to absorb that position. My biggest goal with our reductions is, again, to make sure that there are services to victims in our communities. My admin has taken a disproportionate hit because I, again, would rather absorb that where I can with federal grant money and make sure that our programs are as funded as best we can.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Just so on page 72, then, so we see cuts until we get to page 72, and then it looks like there's increase in salaries and benefits.
Yes, Representative Chairman, Representative Harsman. That's that increase to the surcharge. That's not general fund.
Okay.
That's what I was referring to, that one position transfer. And what that is actually spending authority increase, not increased money, because we do collect money in the surcharge from criminal fines and fees.
Okay. Other questions?
Just when was the last time that the surcharge was increased or visited?
Chairman, Representative Greer, I'm not quite sure. I came to the division in 2011, and I think there had been a fairly recent increase as far as the amounts, because I'm sure you're aware there's a set amount per misdemeanor and felony. I believe that it's been some time. I'm more than happy to increase it if you would like to do that. I would entertain that.
Yeah, Mr. Trout. No, I'm just asking. I mean,
it's been at least 6-7 years that it's remained steady where they're at those levels.
Mr. Chairman, can we get a maybe a definite statement in what it was increased from and where it's at now?
Chairman, if Representative Greer, if the question is, was it increased and when, I can get that legislative history for you. That was prior to my being a director.
Mr. Chair, can I add on to that, the dollar amount that's associated with those increases?
Oh, my goodness. You'd have to make me look at the statute because it's, of course, for each first felony and each misdemeanor, and it depends on which crime it is. And I never seem to. If you look on the surcharge section, let's see. Surcharge. So if you look at the statute, I'm looking at page 72, but I believe it's probably the description. The description of the account is on page 71, but it doesn't actually say the amounts. You know, that's something I'm terrible at memorizing amounts. I believe it's in the 150 range for misdemeanors, maybe 130 range, and it goes up for felonies. Perhaps some of the practitioners in the room might remember a little bit better than I do.
I think for your misdemeanors and stuff, it's like $150 or something.
Right.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, all I'm asking for is a one-pager. Last time it was raised, what the amounts are, so I can look at it quickly and see if it's something we want to revisit or not, or somebody might.
We can provide that, absolutely.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Next is domestic violence, sexual assault.
Domestic violence?
I think that...
Well, Senator Hester was successful with the mic, so if she can...
No, I don't.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Again, this is just the straight percentage cut that we were requested by the governor's office. It's part of the reduction.
So this is just basically cuts in the grants?
This is, if you're looking at the cuts to the general fund, those were just the percentage cuts.
Chairman?
Yes.
So what was specifically cut? I mean, do you... Is it a percentage of all grants that go out? You reduced them all a little bit, or did you eliminate one entire provider?
So what we did for this biennium, and it's a difference of what we did at the beginning when we made our original penny plan cuts versus where we are now. We have made cuts to our general fund, 600 series pass-through money, to all of our units. Domestic violence, sexual assault, victim witness, salary assistance, child advocacy, centers, our admin budget. I believe that's all the general fund line items. What we did at the beginning of this budget biennium, when we had to make the cuts, we did eliminate all of the general fund appropriation to the child advocacy centers. And that was done in discussion with the governor's office and with the service providers in our state. And we were able to do that because we had seen an increase in our VOCA grant. And when we were trying to be strategic about how can we use our federal grant money in the best way possible and try to find some savings with our general fund money, we realized that the child advocacy centers are the most appropriate place to take back those general funds because their services that are provided are very much in the allowable costs of VOCA. We saw all 50 states have seen a substantial increase in our VOCA money. So we were not only able to make up the difference of the general fund reduction, but they actually saw an increase in federal money only. So now those programs receive only federal money from us and are able to continue in operation providing services to the communities. So that's probably the biggest general fund cut that we made. And that was able to offset cuts across the agency, quite frankly. And so we were very fortunate that that worked out that way. Beyond that, the rest of the reductions to the general fund, those passed through, those 600 series, domestic violence, sexual assault, victim witness, were just percentage that we were requested to make. Trying to be strategic as possible, again, trying to make the cuts where they weren't going to impact services to victims in the communities. So, again, taking a big chunk from victim service supplemental salary line item, got rid of that, and then again just made up the difference where we could after we gave up that position also and moved that position into surcharge. So I've probably made it muddy. It's late, but if there are questions.
So just at this, in summary, you took a program that costs $368,000, and you use BOCA grants of $200,000 to supplement it or to take over that component of it.
Is it? Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay. Further questions? Okay. So are we now on? I guess we've kind of talked already about Child Advocacy Center. Is that?
That's what I explained, sir. Yes, absolutely, Chairman.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
So the Child Advocacy Center, and like many of your units that you've transferred to other funds, they're not seeing any reduction, or they are?
I'm sorry, I don't know if I understood the question.
I'm not sure if I understand either. I think the $368,000 elimination of Child Advocacy Center pass-through funding.
Yes.
Is that entire amount made up then?
Yes. Yes.
Entire amount.
Yes, and plus some. They actually received more money than that. If you recall, I was in the hot seat because I had a huge spending authority request last go round because I had a huge VOCA bump. So yes. So those programs saw more money this year.
How much more?
Off the top of my head, I'm not quite sure. We have them request. It's a decent amount. I mean, under the original formula, they each got about $66,000. And what we were able to do is because we had the VOCA money and they were able to write to the VOCA grant, we were able to fund specific programs that they wanted to put on. And so that is more on my program management side of the house. I could provide you exactly what all three programs get, but I don't have that off the top of my head because it's all in the VOCA.
Any further questions on that? So we're on victim witnesses funding.
Yes, sir. That represents just the percentage cut as requested by the governor's office. And then
DVS administration?
That's the position that was transferred to the surcharge. So that's the position that was previously funded by the general fund.
All right.
We've eliminated that general fund appropriation request, and then that position was transferred to the surcharge account. That was the $30,000 increase that we identified on I think it was page 72.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Mr. Chairman, Representative Walters has a question.
No, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we could go back to the Child Advocacy Centers.
Yes, sir.
And on the bottom of page 75, the very last line says, DVS is requesting an appropriation of $200,000 in state general funds to provide funding for eligible Child Advocacy Centers with the full pass-through to these nonprofit agencies. What's going on there? I don't track that.
I'm not really either, but so what had originally happened with this fund is historically it had been funded at $200,000 for a biennium. And when times were good, the governor put through an increase and gave them a $200,000 increase. And so I don't know if that is left in from – so then it went at the beginning of this budget at $400,000. Of course, we've been cut and cut, and that's where we ended up with the three somewhat. So I don't know what that means because we don't have – 200. Yeah, we're not requesting.
I think that was a holdover from a prior budget request. That's not. No, we're not asking for general fund money to run to support the Child Advocacy Centers. Recognizing that, as Director Chambers made clear, we are supporting the Child Advocacy Centers at levels above what they were previously receiving. So we're not diminishing that work. We're just making sure that work is carried out under federal grants and taking advantage of the increased federal grant that we received last year.
So do you guys have some of the proofreads your products?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
That's the standard budget narrative that was originally submitted in 17 and 18, and that's true with all the budgets when you're looking at the standard budget. This is not an exception budget or a change in budget request. I think that's where the confusion lies.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, now I understand where you came up with that 200,000. I didn't understand when you'd asked. I thought, I don't know what he's asking about.
Okay. Yes. Senator Landon.
I'm sorry to belabor, but real quickly on the child advocacy
centers.
Mm-hmm. Does that restrict in any way what they can do or how they must operate now that they've been pulled over strictly on federal funds?
Mr. Chairman,
they still able to provide this, the same kind of service that they've been providing?
My understanding is that they are able to do the same services. Now, that being true, general fund money and federal funds do come with different strings, but the reason we chose VOCA for the CACs was because it most appropriately matched their current functions. So from talking to the three executive directors, it hasn't affected them at all. It's just where the money's coming from.
Thank you.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, I'm confused a little bit. Not here, but just with our process. If there was, because that appears to be like an exception request from the general budget, and if it was denied, it doesn't show back up as a standard budget request. I guess, Mr. Chairman, to understand Kevin's comment there. I mean, if it's a leftover, it's a leftover. It's no big deal. I just.
Yes, it's just the standard budget. The original standard budget narrative across all the budgets are still there. That doesn't have any action that was taken by the legislature, no penny plan, none of the exception requests or supplemental documents or in that. It's just most of the time what you'll see there is statutory authority, an explanation of what the program is, and that's what was submitted originally when we set up the 17 and 18 budget. It doesn't have anything to do with this supplemental budget other than the fact that we just cut and pasted their old standard narrative.
Okay. All right. And we are talked. I think we talked about DVS administration. And
yes. Yeah, I believe we covered that. That was just the position moving into surcharge. And so that represents.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Sorry, I need to back up. On page 78, Kara, there's a reduction to the victim witness, the 39,000, so not much. But then there's a note down there about the 20% matching. And so I am curious, just in general, are any of the cuts that you're proposing, do they impact matching funds? And then, is there something special going on with the victim witness funding?
Mr. Chairman, so anytime we make match on a federal grant, we use our general fund money. So, yes, anytime we reduce our general fund, that is reducing the amount of money that we can use to make match. This particular note, it was probably, again, a little bit of a holdover from saying, look, when you were, I think my heart stopped last time when someone mentioned $1 million, and I said, if you do that, we won't make match, and we won't be able to fund our programs adequately. I believe that's a holdover. I'm not concerned with this small percentage of a match, with these programs being able to make match.
Okay.
So
provider salary? Is that you?
Yeah. Yes, that's me still. Sorry. You're stuck with me. It is still.
This last one?
Last one. Victim service, victim witness funding, sorry. Service provider salaries. That was what I referred to of trying to be strategic and doing equitable as opposed to equal cuts. That was where I could make the biggest impact to savings to the general fund while not harming programs, because again, that represented the second year of a biennium of funding to each of our 61 subrecipient programs who receive about $8,000 apiece in salary assistance. It was carved out only to go towards existing salary for executive directors, et cetera, back when times were good and we had money. So this was one area where I was able to make a higher percentage cut in order to save the integrity of the rest of the programs that we fund, if that makes sense.
Okay. Any questions?
All right. Now you are finally done.
Yes.
Okay.
And this is the last unit, the Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities. I think there's I want to explain what happened with the council, because it's not a function of an intentional decision, certainly by us or by the council. What happened is that in prior year budgets, the council is a 25% state, 75% federal match. And we discovered we were overmatching that federal grant by a significant amount. And the question was, well, how did that happen? Why would we provide more than 25% and was that an intentional policy decision, or was that something else? Well, what had happened is that the entirety of the personnel had been placed on the 25% match. And so what happened was that over several biennial budgets, as the cost of employees grew, you know, they're the matches that you make as a legislature on standard budget increases for increases in health insurance costs, retirement costs, et cetera, that increase was made to the general fund provided to this program. So what we discovered was that this program was originally designed and intended to be a 25-75 match. We also recognize that there had not been a policy decision at any time to do that. It had simply been a function of the regular appropriations process and how these positions were allocated when the budget was created and presented to you all. What we have done is we have put all of the employees on to reflect the general match, which is 25-75. So, you know, moving forward, to the extent that there are increases to the cost of an employee, 25% of that would be the general fund, and 75% of that would need to be provided by the federal funds that are provided to this program. That's painful. I mean, I'm not here to tell you. I mean, the Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities has lost a position and a contractor. So they are now three. They also are one of the vacancies that is listed as 0 months on the sheet. That person left on Friday, and we're seeking to fill them so they can be back up above what to that three person level. But they have been reduced to basically to near, but not exactly to their federal match, their state match for the federal funds. I'll let the director, if you want to talk about the work they do and the effects on the work they do. I mean, this is important work, but recognizing that there had not been a policy determination to overmatch this, that it had been done through how their salaries were allocated. We didn't feel we felt like that was a determination that, you know, if the legislature wants to overmatch them, especially in a time of budget shortfall, that's certainly your prerogative to do so. But we weren't going to present to you a budget that did so.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. I think we're done.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Tough duty bringing up the caboose here, but thanks for your patience.
Thank you. And Pete, we appreciate what you did and the cuts that you made. I know it's not an easy thing to do, but you did a good job of walking through the Gov's cuts, and not all agencies did that, so we appreciate it.
Thanks for that comment.
Thanks, yes, sir.
Okay, committee, we are, unless there's other business, Don, we're scheduled to start at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. And we'll pick up with the agenda. And we're adjourned.